You're listening to the CyberWire Network, powered by N2K.
In the dynamic world of enterprise security, identity architects and IT leaders face a major challenge. Growth by repeated acquisitions multiplies the complexity of everything. Multiple IDPs, MFA providers, policy engines that all need to coexist. This can lead to fragmented user identities and policies that create security vulnerabilities and add access friction. Strata Identity solves this. Now you can decommission unneeded IDPs and consolidate the ones you'd like to keep without rewriting apps or disrupting users, engineers, and app owners. Plus, Strata's modular architecture makes it easy to integrate with any identity provider without manual maintenance and coding. Join the ranks of cybersecurity leaders using identity orchestration. Visit strata.io/cyberwire, share your top identity security priorities, and receive a pair of complimentary AirPods Pro. Offer valid for organizations with over 5,000 employees. Step into a new era of identity management at strata.io/cyberwire.
Facebook continues to investigate its breach. Irish authorities open a GDPR investigation of Facebook. Bogus offers of Zoho Office Suite are malicious. A big botnet hits Brazil's banking customers. Home routers are found vulnerable. Google and Adobe patch. A DGSI officer is arrested in France for dark web trafficking. FEMA tests its emergency text system. And Fortnite cheats are bad news. From the CyberWire studios at DataTribe, I'm Dave Bittner with your CyberWire summary for Wednesday, October 3rd, 2018. Facebook says that so far it's seen no evidence of illicit sign-ons to third-party apps. There have been concerns that the social media platform's Facebook login feature would expose applications to fraud or hijacking. Irish authorities, the one-stop shop for Facebook with respect to GDPR enforcement, are proceeding with their investigation of the breach. Speculation in Europe and elsewhere is trending toward thinking that the fine, and most seem to expect a fine, will be a stiff one, despite Facebook's quick compliance with disclosure rules. A quick note on the EU's one-stop-shop principle with respect to its general data protection regulation. In brief, it means that when there's cross-border processing of personal information covered by GDPR, organizations doing that processing, in this case Facebook, but it applies generally, will deal with one supervisory authority. That lead supervisory authority, in this case Ireland's government, doesn't completely preclude other data protection authorities from involving themselves, but the one-stop shop is at least the first shop you have to stop in. While Facebook is getting credit for quick disclosure, that quick disclosure is giving many second thoughts about whether the tight 72-hour GDPR standard is entirely wise. Investigation is still far from complete, and many observers think that coming out publicly so swiftly hasn't been good for the quality of incident response. Security company Cofence warns users of the free Zoho Office Suite that they're at risk of data exfiltration attacks. Criminals have opened multiple keylogging campaigns that exploit the product. The crooks are, for the most part, setting up bogus sites with equally bogus free offers of the product, so classify this one as social engineering. High-profile Instagram users, influencers, are being subject to an account hijacking campaign in which criminals are holding the victims' accounts for ransom. It seems, according to Naked Security, that the root problem is failure to enable two-factor authentication. Instagram recommends you do so, whether you're a high-profile influencer or just a regular type. Security firm T-Cell provides cloud-based web application firewall services, and that provides them with some interesting insights into app security. They recently gathered up some of those findings and published a security report for web applications. Michael Feiertag is CEO at T-Cell.
Last year, we did an analysis of how often attacks were successful. And what we found is that if a attacker tried 100,000 different things against the average application, they might find one vulnerability. We found that that's actually stayed consistent over the year. But then we decided to dig a little bit deeper to figure out what are the sources of those vulnerabilities that people are finding. What we found most striking was that when we looked at the various applications we were protecting, particularly when we were first installed, when it's kind of a clean data, sort of clean view of the world, we found that literally 90% of the active applications, so 90% of the apps that we saw exposed to the outside world, were running with third-party libraries that had known vulnerabilities, right? So it wasn't in the running an app with a vulnerability was not the exception; it was the absolute rule. And spitballing, roughly a third of those were actually high priority or critical CVEs. So we're not talking about minor little things. We're talking about very significant vulnerabilities introduced into the application from third-party content. And we found that really, really interesting. We also saw that the applications over the course, even just over this narrow period of time that we were observing, which was roughly a month or so, they evolve very rapidly. So people are really adopting DevOps and Agile and so forth. But there's a side effect of that, which is that the surface area of the application, so basically how the apps could be attacked, it doesn't just change. They seem to keep expanding. And we think that's a source of great vulnerability out there that maybe hasn't been focused on enough. So, we'll see, an average application with literally 2,900 what we call orphaned routes, which is basically, API endpoints or web pages or things that the application can do with actual code behind them that are not actually being used, right? That we see no traffic against them. But we know that they can be exercised by the outside world, which means an attacker could hit that, and those tend to be the most vulnerable, untested functions of the application. So, 2,900 different functions of the application exposed, generally untested, and not being used.
And what's the disconnect there? I mean, obviously, people aren't introducing these vulnerabilities intentionally. So, where's the oversight? What's the process by which they're included?
Every app is being built on third-party content, right? There are third-party libraries, and so forth. So this isn't intentional, but what happens is, there's a few things, and this is more anecdotal. Once you get something working, developers, they're focusing on functionality, and so you kind of move on to the next thing. Vulnerabilities are discovered very often after the fact, and so if you have an app that's been running for a couple of years, maybe when it was first shipped, it didn't have any known vulnerabilities because the third-party libraries were fresh and nothing had been discovered yet, but they were there. Then over time, the world finds out about these. So there's, think of a Struts 2 as sort of the extreme example of that. You realize, I'm running this application. It's built on a library that either a day ago or a year ago, we discovered some high-priority CVEs against that. People don't have visibility into that. Without additional tooling, that's not very common. T-cell provides that, but as I mentioned, when people first implement, they get kind of the first view of it, which is, oh man, I've been running this for a year, and it turns out that this library I was using does have a huge hole in it, and I really wouldn't have known that otherwise. And so, if I'm not actively patching everything, on an almost daily basis, you run a lot of risk. And then the other side, the source of this is, again, people are trying to move faster, right? The goal is ultimately to ship better software with more functionality. So they're iterating quickly. But then what that translates to is you see what ultimately becomes cruft in the background. Those are those orphan routes. And again, without visibility into that where you can actually measure it, it just falls to the wayside, right? If you don't see it, you don't think about it. If you don't think about it, you don't address it. And so, to answer your question directly, I think that the real source of a lot of these problems is lack of visibility into risk of the running applications, whether it's understanding what attacks are happening, and so how people are trying to compromise you, or just understanding the underlying structure of your applications as they're changing from a security perspective and knowing what to do about them.
That's Michael Feiertag from T-Cell. If you want to dig into their security report for web applications,
You can find it on the T-Cell website. Security firms Radware and Kihu 360 are independently tracking a very large botnet that's intercepting traffic destined for Brazilian banks. More than 100,000 routers have seen their DNS settings altered to redirect users to watering hole pages. Most of the routers affected, 88% of them according to ZDNet, are located in Brazil. As one might expect, the goal of the redirection is credential theft. Tenable, the Maryland-based security company, warns that widely used TP-Link TLWR841N consumer routers are susceptible to attacks that concatenate a series of flaws to obtain control over the devices. TP-Link has yet to fix the vulnerable firmware. Unfortunately, there seems to be no mitigation. If you own one of the routers, Tenable suggests you call the vendor to complain to light a fire under them and accelerate patching. Several companies have patched their widely used products. Adobe has fixed 85 issues, 47 of them critical, in Acrobat and Reader. Google has addressed 6 critical remote code execution vulnerabilities in the Android operating system. Mountain View has also put measures in place to introduce more privacy and security into app development. A dirty cop has been arrested in France. He worked for the DGSI, that's the General Directorate for Internal Security. They work on counter-espionage, counter-terrorism, counter-cybercrime, and surveillance of potential threats. Its functions would be similar to those of the U.S. FBI, although DGSI is more an intelligence and security service than it is a law enforcement agency. The unnamed officer is accused of selling confidential information to mobsters on the Black Hand dark web market. He went by the hacker name Horus, and he's thought to have sold material that aided and abetted forgery. He also is said to have hawked a service that would tell clients whether they were being tracked by the French police and what the police had on them. Did you get your text alert from FEMA today, U.S. listeners? We did. It came in a little after 2 p.m. Eastern Time. It wasn't at all distracting or disruptive, and it looked like a practice alert, a drill, and not the real thing. Emergency alert, it said. This is a test, in all caps, of the National Wireless Emergency Alert System. No action is needed. That's plain enough to us. If you're confused, then shame on you and go back to your basement to hide from those Martian tripods we hear just landed in South Jersey. Finally, there are Fortnite cheats circulating in instructional videos posted to YouTube. Players who attempt to use them are likely to be infected with malware for their troubles. There's similar stuff on offer through Instagram posts. Don't cheat. Besides, the cheats wouldn't improve your dance anyway.
Hey everybody, today I want to highlight a name that all of us know well, and that is our sponsor, Splunk. You need to keep operations humming around the clock, but potential disruptions are everywhere. Splunk helps you predict problems and find and fix issues fast so you can reduce risk and ditch downtime. The world's largest enterprises rely on Splunk's unified security and observability platform to become more efficient, resilient, and innovative. With Splunk, you can react quickly, evolve faster, and be ready for anything. Stay ahead of disruptions. Learn more at splunk.com/resilience. And we thank Splunk for sponsoring our show. And now, a word from our sponsor, Zscaler, the leader in cloud security. Cyber attackers are using AI in creative ways to compromise users and breach organizations. In a security landscape where you must fight AI with AI, the best AI protection comes from having the best data. Zscaler has extended its Zero Trust architecture with powerful AI engines that are trained and tuned by 500 trillion daily signals. Learn more about Zscaler Zero Trust plus AI to prevent ransomware and AI attacks. Experience your world secured. Visit zscaler.com/zerotrustAI. The IT world used to be simpler. You only had to secure and manage environments that you controlled. Then came new technologies and new ways to work. Now, employees, apps, and networks are everywhere. This means poor visibility, security gaps, and added risk. That's why Cloudflare created the first-ever connectivity cloud. Visit cloudflare.com to protect your business everywhere you do business.
And I'm pleased to be joined once again by David DeFore. He is the Vice President of Engineering and Cybersecurity at Webroot. David, welcome back. You know, the video game market is huge. It is a giant market. And of course, with that comes security issues. What do we need to know about that?
Yeah, you know, when we talk about video game safety, there is a small niche market that not a lot of people talk about. When you get mad at your computer and you jump around and you throw it around, it might fall on your foot. But that's not what we're talking about today, Dave. We're talking about, you know, like cybersecurity, things like that. One of the big things that we've seen in a shift in the industry is that video games basically have become social networks. And I don't think a lot of people realize that. To call one out that I'm guilty of playing multiple hours a day is Fortnite.
Yes, when my 12-year-old plays a lot of Fortnite. I don't know. I'm not making any connections there, but go on.
Yes, that's been pointed out to me quite often. Thank you. But the with Fortnite, when I'm playing, I actually can be dropped in with 2, 3, 4 other people I don't know, and I'm able to talk to them, not just chat, but actually talk with them. Mm-hmm. And now, you know, you think on the surface, well, that sounds good, and it's pretty nice. It's good community. But there's things that we need to consider. One, to your point, if we have our children playing these games, we need to make sure they're aware of strangers and be conscious of the people they're talking to. These are real people, and just be aware of that, you know, community. And then there are things they need to pay attention to. That's one component. The other would be there's a lot of in-game purchases now, both on mobile apps, on large games like Fortnite, even other games that are, you know, solo games. And so a lot of these games have our credit card information, have our addresses, have personal information about us. And so we need to also be aware that if these games get hacked, that it's possible someone could get our information and use it in ways we don't want, or charge something up and change our account. And next thing you know, we got $1,000 charge we didn't expect. So we've got to be conscious of that as well. As you know, there's a lot more selling going on in these environments.
Yeah, I think it's easy to think, particularly when you think about these gaming platforms, that they're kind of walled gardens. But when it is a functional social network, well, you got to be worried about things like social engineering.
That's exactly right. And again, it's just about being conscious of it. You know, it's great. Social networks aren't inherently bad. It's just be aware that you're talking to strangers. And one last thing we see quite a bit, and here, you know, at Webroot, we make antivirus software. We see a lot of gamers turn off their antivirus while they're playing games and potentially forget to turn it back on. And so if you do that, you know, you're opening yourself up to risk. I highly recommend you find something that works while you're playing a game and doesn't affect it, because you do want that optimal performance. But you also need to be aware of making things run better. Sometimes you turn things off and you're taking that risk, or maybe you're opening up ports on a firewall because you want to play a game with your friends and you're doing a peer-to-peer network. You just got to keep in mind the stuff you're doing and not expose yourself to security risks you wouldn't normally do.
No, it's a great point. I remember when my oldest son was a teenager, I sat down at our family computer one day and noticed that some ports had been opened up, and I was like, what's going on here? And my son said, oh, I just needed to play a game. I went, whoa, hold on here, cowboy. No.
That's exactly right. And honestly, the gaming industry has spent a ton of time, energy, and money, and I got to tip my hat to them, in securing these networks and making it so you don't have to do that. But, you know, there's still flaws. But more than most industries, they really do look at security and take it seriously.
No, it's interesting. David DeFore, thanks for joining us.
Thanks for having me, David.
Managing the requirements for modern security programs is increasingly challenging and time-consuming. Enter Vanta. Vanta gives you one place to centralize and scale your security program. Quickly assess risk, streamline security reviews, and automate compliance for ISO 27001, SOC 2, and more. You can leverage Vanta's market-leading trust management platform to unify risk management and secure the trust of your customers. Plus, use Vanta AI to save time when completing security questionnaires. CyberWire daily listeners can get $1,000 off by going to vanta.com/cyber. That's vanta.com/cyber.
And that's the CyberWire. For links to all of today's stories, check out our daily briefing at thecyberwire.com. And for professionals and cybersecurity leaders who want to stay abreast of this rapidly evolving field, sign up for CyberWire Pro. It'll save you time and keep you informed. Listen for us on your Alexa smart speaker, too. The CyberWire podcast is proudly produced in Maryland out of the startup studios of Data Tribe, where they're co-building the next generation of cybersecurity teams and technologies. Our amazing CyberWire team is Elliot Peltzman, Peru Prakash, Stefan Vaziri, Kelsey Bond, Tim Nodar, Joe Kerrigan, Carol Terrio, Ben Yellen, Nick Vilecki, Gina Johnson, Bennett Moe, Chris Russell, John Petrick, Jennifer Iben, Rick Howard, Peter Kilpie, and I'm Dave Bittner. Thanks for listening. We'll see you back here tomorrow.